States v. Sanders. Ms. Christensen, have you recovered from your last oral argument? Are you prepared to go forward?
Different names. That's very important. May it please the court, counsel. Good morning again, Your Honors. My name is Joanna Christensen. I represent the appellant, Jared Sanders, in this case. The first issue is a trial issue regarding whether the district court improperly eliminated cross and direct examination regarding the issue of whether the two officers involved had given Miranda warnings to the defendants arrested at the house. This is an issue not that's collateral, but of witness credibility. The government's case was based entirely on the testimony of these police officers, which contradicted at times, but specifically about whether Miranda warnings were given and who gave them. Every other part of the government's witnesses, their testimony coincided, except for this Miranda issue, which a significant part of credibility was to be attacked on that issue. The defense case contradicted the government's evidence significantly, but yet again, those witnesses were not allowed to testify regarding Miranda issues. The district court thus limited the jury's access to evidence regarding credibility, particularly the Miranda warnings, and the evidence may have provided essential evidence to show the government witness bias or false testimony. Then, of course, the limitation of the defense witnesses in the defense's case compounded this problem because no one got to speak of an essential part of that day, which were everybody was gathered up, arrested, given Miranda warnings, taken down to the police station, and apparently given Miranda warnings again, and then that the defendant was interviewed.
Why didn't Sanders present those witnesses to the trial judge at the hearing on the motion to suppress, which would have been the proper form for determining whether the Miranda warnings were given?
The issue was raised at the motion to suppress. The defense witnesses were not called at that time.
I wonder why.
And I don't have a good answer for that. It is possible that it did not come out in detail, the conflicts in the Miranda warning evidence, until the motion to suppress hearing. It's unclear exactly what was going on. I was not trial counsel, so I certainly don't have anything in my mind about that issue. That's what I guess from the record, is that the conflicts did not come out until that time. The motion to suppress hearing unusually was held the first morning of trial, essentially, on Monday morning. And so there was a time limit, certainly, and a time crunch as to the hearing and then the trial starting immediately. And certainly, the court seemed to rely on the fact seemed to think defense counsel was trying to relitigate the Miranda issue in front of the jury. And while that's a fine line, because Miranda issues are usually motion to suppress issues, not jury issues, defense counsel made it clear that he was bringing it up not necessarily to have a jury finding on whether Miranda warnings were given, but as an attack on the officer's credibility, particularly where the officers themselves disagreed about who had given Miranda warnings and when.
So in other words, you were essentially, not you, but
defense counsel.
Trial counsel was essentially attempting to demonstrate that the police lied as to whether they gave the Miranda warning and therefore lied as to what Sanders said.
Correct.
Well, doesn't that inevitably involve the jury in considering an issue that was already decided in the motion to suppress?
It's the same evidence. It's a different issue. The evidence before the district court for the motion to suppress is whether those Miranda warnings were given. In essence, defense counsel wasn't trying to get to the ultimate question as to whether they were given. The defense counsel was trying to get to the differences in the police officer's testimony regarding those Miranda warnings, the differences that might have impacted the jury's finding of credibility. So it's essentially the same evidence used for a different purpose at trial. And finally, the government argues, of course, that this was harmless error, and there are basically four elements to consider whether this is harmless error. The importance of the testimony, of course, I've covered that with this being the only testimony that would have showed that the police officers did not agree about what happened. The testimony was not cumulative in that the district court disallowed all Miranda warning testimony. There was corroborating evidence of it. The officers testified differently about it, but the defense witnesses would have testified consistently about the Miranda warnings and that none were given. And the overall strength of the government case, of course, the government's case was based primarily on the officer's testimony at trial, and therefore any credibility issue regarding the officers would be enormously important against the government's case. The second issue occurred at sentencing regarding the district court shifting the burden of proof from the government to prove an enhancement to the defense counsel. And while we agree that the district court didn't say the words, the defendant has the burden of proof here, from what transpired at the sentencing hearing, it's clear that the district court was looking for defense counsel to prove that Mr. Sanders had not obstructed justice.
I thought the district court said, in essence, the government has met its burden. Mm-hmm. Persuade me otherwise. What's wrong with that?
Well, the district court said that there's been an objection to this. And then proceeded to have defense counsel argue against that objection.
If anything, however, it provided the defendant an additional opportunity to present his position in opposition. I thought it was kind of a good thing.
Well, it certainly it was a good colloquy between defense counsel and the district court. The problem with it was that was the only colloquy that occurred regarding this issue. And at the end, after the judge had made the decision, says in rather an offhand way to the government, do you have anything to add about this? Which shows that the court was really focused on defense counsel making the negative argument rather than the government.
We're talking here about the obstruction of justice enhancement based on an affidavit that was presented to the district judge that the district judge himself found was false, right? I mean, there's not a need for a whole lot more to be said, is there?
Well, it's certainly the factors of an obstruction of justice. The government or the district court had found that it was false.
False, willful, and material. Right.
Right. Yeah. But the colloquy shows that the court had not, at the beginning of the hearing, found materiality and that it was willful, because those are where the questions were centered, and the questions that were asked to defense counsel, you know, if it's false material, the remaining issue is whether it was willful. Do you have anything to say about that to defense counsel? And in our view, of that should have been the government's burden. Government, how is this willful? And defense counsel then allowed to, of course, rebut that. But the switching showed that the district court was
Sounds like the defense position is that the government didn't have enough opportunity to speak on this.
Well, that's certainly the way it sounds, but it's the manner in which the sentencing hearing is conducted, and it may have been that defense counsel didn't have a problem defending his position, which none of us should, but the point is that the law requires the government to first meet its burden and then the defense to answer that burden. And unless the court has further questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Ms. Porter.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Julie Porter, and I represent the United States. During both the trial and the sentencing phases of this case, the district court responsibly and appropriately exercised his discretion both as to the evidentiary issues before him and as to the sentence. If I may focus first on the trial, this was a straightforward case in which the defendant was caught red-handed with a gun. The government did call three police officers in its case in chief, and defense counsel were permitted to cross-examine each of those witnesses as to the events of July 14th, which was the day that they had gone in and executed a search warrant finding the defendant with a gun. The only limit that the district court placed on defense counsel in their questioning was on the issue of the timing of Miranda warnings. When this issue was first raised with Officer Cassanda, who was the first officer to testify, an objection was made by the government, and the district court heard defense counsel, what was the purpose for which defense counsel sought to cross-examine Officer Cassanda about the timing of giving these warnings. It was then very clear that the sole reason that defense counsel wished to cross-examine Officer Cassanda on this issue was to try and point up a conflict between Officer Cassanda and Officer Pendarvis about the timing that the warnings were given. Now, cutting to the end of this, what is this Miranda warning issue? At the suppression hearing, which indeed did occur the Monday morning preceding the trial, both officers Cassanda and Pendarvis had been questioned and cross-examined about their giving of Miranda warnings. The difference is not as stark as defense counsel has portrayed here. Both officers recalled that it was Officer Cassanda who Mirandized the arrestees as a group. The only difference between their testimony on that point was that Officer Cassanda recalled giving those warnings at the house before the arrestees were transported to the police station, whereas Officer Pendarvis recalled Officer Cassanda Mirandizing the arrestees as a group at the police station. That was really the only difference. Judge Kaur remembered that testimony from the suppression hearing, and he questioned defense counsel about that. It was very clear that that was the conflict in the testimony that defense counsel wished to expose. The district court correctly found that that constituted impeachment on a matter that was collateral to the issues before the jury, and he precluded it.
Well, was there any other way to avoid jury confusion and allow the testimony for impeachment purposes, such as through the use of a limiting instruction?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, that really wasn't necessary. Defense counsel was permitted to cross-examine these officers about all the circumstances that day. Miranda held, at least in defense counsel's presentation of it, sort of a different significance. And defense counsel did later say it wasn't simply on the issue of credibility. Defense counsel did say, and this was at the pages 76 and 78 of that particular transcript, that they were calling into question whether Miranda was given. And as the district court judge put out, he was not going to be instructing the jury about Miranda. The suppression hearing had already been held. And significantly, defense counsel was not precluded from questioning any of these officers about other circumstances of what they apprehended during the search warrant, what the circumstances were of the transport, what the circumstances were of the questioning, all things that certainly were appropriate for the jury to consider in determining the statements that the defendant later made, or that the government alleged that the defendant made.
Ms. Porter, did the government, in its case in chief, introduce evidence about whether Miranda warnings had been given?
We did not question witnesses about that, Your Honor. When Officer Cassanda testified, there was a question to him about what happened next. And Officer Cassanda's answer, I believe, said, well, we gathered them up, we read them their rights, we put them in the car. So the government, the prosecutor, had not directly asked a question about that. But at the trial, that portion of the answer was given. In reviewing the record, Your Honor, that was the only mention on a direct examination that I saw of that. But certainly, Your Honors, the notion of the timing of the giving of Miranda warnings was not something that was essential to the jury's finding. It was not an element of the offense. It was collateral. And the defense counsel were not precluded or prohibited from asking questions that would have attacked credibility of the officers. And to give you an example, Officer Cassanda gave testimony during the trial about the statement that he took from the defendant at the police station. He was vigorously cross-examined at trial about the fact that he had not recorded that in his report. He was the person who prepared the case report and had not included the defendant's confession. He had not used any recording devices, which defense counsel found significant. And Officer Pendarvis was likewise vigorously cross-examined about the fact that he had reported finding the defendant's gun in a different place than was later shown in the police report. So this was a very, very narrow limitation that it was a proper exercise of the district court's discretion to find. Defense counsel here also mentioned the preclusion of defense witnesses testifying about the Miranda issues. And I would note there was no proffer from defense counsel that the defense witnesses would have testified about Miranda warnings to the defendant. The only proffer is that they would have testified about Miranda warnings to them, which is a far cry from relevance in terms of the case, and even if relevant, certainly, again, would be impeaching on a collateral matter. In addition, on the harmless error point, defense counsel noted that this was a case built entirely on the police officer's testimony, and that makes the issue of credibility all the more important. There was ample corroboration for what the police officers testified about in this trial. One item of corroboration was the gun itself, which was recovered and was presented as evidence during the trial. Another interesting source of corroboration came from the defense's own witnesses. No, they did not testify that they saw the officers collect a gun from the defendant, but they did testify with one outline example of Ms. Alexander, who testified in the defense case. They did testify about the events of that day, and although they had differences in perception, that is, they were not present for all of the events involving the defendant, or they were not paying attention during some of those events, they gave essentially the same account as the officers about the events. Part of the defense theory was that the police had planted this gun on Mr. Sanders. The fact that one of the defense witnesses took the stand and admitted that a gun had in fact been recovered from him, drugs had in fact been recovered from him, that he had pled guilty to that charge, that did corroborate the police officer's account of what they were doing that morning. In terms of the sentencing procedure, Your Honors, the record just does not support the claim that the district court shifted any burden to the defendant. What the record shows instead is that the district court judge here was very prepared for this sentencing. The government had submitted a government's version in which we sought the obstruction of justice enhancement. We supported our request for that both with a recitation of the false statements from the defendant's affidavit in support of the suppression motion, as well as case law that we believed supported imposition of the enhancement. When the probation officer prepared a PSR, the probation officer agreed with us. We then filed another position paper before sentencing in which we adopted and agreed with that. So by the time we got to the day of sentencing, the district court judge, who is, as Your Honor pointed out, the person who had heard the testimony, who had seen the affidavit, who had made findings on the suppression hearing, and who had heard all of the witnesses at trial, he had some views on whether the obstruction enhancement was appropriate here. At that point, the district court walked through the correct legal elements of an enhancement for obstruction of justice, that is. He made specific findings about which statements in the affidavit he found to be false. He made specific findings about their materiality. And on that issue of willfulness, he gave defense counsel, it was clear from the court's comments that he was troubled by the statements. He believed they were willful, and he asked defense counsel, is there any explanation of how defendant could have been mistaken, if he might have been under a misapprehension because the district court just didn't see it? And after a very extensive discussion of that, he did ask government counsel what our view was, and government counsel responded that we agreed with the district court's assessment, which we did. That was a correct procedure, and it was a correct result. We ask that this court affirm both the conviction and the sentence. Thank you.
Thanks, Ms. Christian.
Just briefly, Your Honors, regarding the Miranda issue, government counsel is correct that the defense witnesses would have talked about whether they were given Miranda rights. However, the officers both testified that the defendants were given Miranda rights as a group. So whether a defense witness was given their Miranda rights is ultimately also the issue of whether Mr. Sanders was given Miranda rights, because they were given as a group, first outside of the apartment where they were arrested and then again at the police station. And testimony about another gun, there was another person arrested, Mr. Rogers, arrested with a gun and drugs in the house, and that is not corroborating evidence regarding Mr. Sanders' possession of a gun, which was the link that the government attempted to make. That was his own possession. That man, Mr. Rogers, was actually in a different room of the apartment and was in possession of his own firearm and drugs, which has nothing to do necessarily with Mr. Sanders' possession. And again, I feel as if I have to touch on this again, that this is a credibility determination. It was not a collateral issue. The credibility is for the jury to determine, and this went directly to the credibility of the officers. This was the only issue in which they disagreed, and defense counsel was prohibited from raising that issue in front of the jury. Unless the court has further questions, I'll ask that the court remand for new trial or in the alternative resentencing.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you.
Order, Ms. Bonamici. Thank you.